Good day, and welcome to the TGS Q1 2012 results teleconference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Robert Hobbs, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, and welcome to the TGS first quarter 2012 conference call. My name is Robert Hobbs. I'm CEO of TGS. Joining me today is Kristian Johansen, our Chief Financial Officer, and Karen L. Tewell, our Vice President of Business Development. Earlier today, we posted our first quarter 2012 earnings release, along with a recorded presentation of the results. I hope you've had an opportunity to view that material, and we'll just give a brief summary now of the main points before opening the call to your questions. In the first quarter 2012, our total net revenues were $191 million, up 45% from Q1 of 2011. This performance represents the highest net sales reported for a single quarter in the company's history and confirms the expected increase in interest for TGS's data products as communicated earlier in the year. Revenues were particularly strong in our North and South America and Africa, Middle East, Asia Pacific businesses, where we benefited from customers' interest in data ahead of the first Central Gulf of Mexico round in 2 years, and strong pre-funding on a large new 3D projects in Angola and Australia. Net late sales totaled $113 million, up 33% from the same period last year, representing an all-time high late sales figure for a first quarter. TGS invested $101 million in its multi-client data library, and associated pre-funding revenues were $75 million, representing a 74% pre-funding ratio. Our Q1 investment was a strong start to an annual plan with high visibility. Our aggressive 2012 investment plan is supported by a backlog at the end of Q1 of $242 million, up 120% from 1 year ago, in another all-time high level for the company. Our multi-client amortization rate for the quarter was 39% of net revenues. Our amortization rate in the same period last year was 40%. This lower amortization rate has contributed to a higher operating margin for Q1 2012 of 46%. Our resulting operating profit was $89 million, compared with a profit of $59 million in the same period of 2011. Our earnings before income tax, or EBIT, in Q1 2012 is the highest in the history for TGS. Earnings per share were 61 cents a share, an increase of 52% from Q1 2011. Net cash flow from operations after taxes and before investments was $147 million, resulting in cash holdings as of March 31 of $421 million, compared to $336 million at the end of 2011. TGS identified and has executed well on new attractive projects in Angola, Australia, and in the onshore and offshore U.S. during Q1. These investments and a growing pipeline of future opportunities are a clear indication of increased demand in geoscience data as oil companies follow through with their planned increases in E&P expenditures. TGS's continued investment in the deep waters of the central planning area of the Gulf of Mexico yielded strong sales in the quarter, as customers license data in advance of the first license round in the Central Gulf of Mexico since 2010. This increased interest is more confirmation of the recovery of the exploration in this important multi-client region. This license round is the first of several late sales triggers expected this year, including the Norwegian 22nd round, where we anticipate we will see solid interest in TGS's recent 2D and 3D investments in the Barents and the North Seas. Combination of attractive, well-funded investment opportunities, as well as our solid sales performance in Q1, has enabled us to update our guidance for 2012. This revised guidance is multi-client investments of $375 to $425 million, average pre-funding in the range of 60 to 70% of those investments, an average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 41 to 47% of net revenues, and that's unchanged from the previous guidance, and net revenues in the range of $760 to $830 million, of which approximately 5% will be from proprietary contract projects. At this time, we'll open the call for your questions. I'll now turn the call over to our operator who will queue the questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, as a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We will pause for a moment to assemble the queue. We will now take our first question from Christopher Mollerlocken of SB1 Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations with a good quarter. Just two short questions from me. You increase your multi-client investments for 2012. Could you give us a bit more flavor in terms of which regions you will increase your investments now compared to prior guidance, and also what's driving the increased pre-funding level? And secondly, in your presentation on slide 25, could you just walk us through which of these vessels are working on TGS 100% projects and which vessels are working on partner projects with other seismic providers? Thank you.
Sure, Christopher. In terms of the investment question, your first question, I think there's not really one particular region that we see where we see a greater increase in visibility than another. I think we're seeing it really, it seems to be a global trend. And likewise for the interest in pre-funding new projects as well. I can't really point to any specific region where we're sort of seeing outstanding trends, both in investment and pre-funding, than any other region. So it seems to be really a global trend related to, you know, our customers' interest in broadening their exploration, both in mature areas as well as frontier areas. When you look at slide 25 on our vessel schedule, I'll just run through it very quickly for you, Christopher. The first three operations that you see on there at the top, the Viking Vision, G Atlantic, and Chico Eagle, those are all 100% TGS projects. The Wide Azimuth project in the Gulf of Mexico is jointly operated with Western Chico, or jointly owned with Western Chico. That's a 50-50 partnership. The project that we indicate with a Ramform vessel in Northwest Europe is a partnership with PGS. The two vessels that we show that we chartered late last year for operations in Northwest Europe, the Polar Duchess and the Polarcus Amani, are both active on 100% TGS owned projects. The Atlantic Explorer is on a partnership project with PGS currently right now. And then we go into the 2D vessels. The Academic Ferrisman is on a joint project with DMNG, or will be on a joint project with DMNG in the Arctic. Senko Spirit is a joint venture with PGS. It's a continuation of our Canada projects from last year. The Osprey Explorer is active, started just recently on our North Barents Sea project. It's a project that we've been investing many years with Fugro, and we've continued that partnership with that vessel, as well as with the Academic Shotsky, which is the next one. Those are both involved in expanding our 2D data library in partnership with Fugro in Northwest Europe. And the Artemis Atlantic, the last 2D vessel that you see on there, is in operating in partnership with Dolphin on a joint project in West Africa. The three land crews that you see at the bottom that we've started showing, those are 100% owned TGS projects.
Many thanks.
We will now take our next question from Jorgen Lande of Nordea Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning and congratulations with a good quarter. Just to follow up on the investment range for 2012, should we see this as a reflection of rising vessel costs? That's the first question. And secondly, how did you find late sales developing in Q1 according to your internal sales budget? And thirdly, your sales mix shows that new projects carry the bulk of revenues, but you report a very low amortization rate. If you can elaborate on that, that would be excellent. Thank you.
Sure. In regards to the growing investment, we did lock in most of the capacity that we're using right now, pretty much all the 3D capacity that we're utilizing right now that we've announced, and we've locked that in 2011. So those were, we're not chartering. We haven't been chartering vessels in the spot market in the summer season in Northwest Europe, so we haven't experienced, so I would characterize our increased investment at this point as being increased opportunities rather than any kind of significant increased cost would be the answer to that question. In terms of our late sales performance in Q1, it was in line with, more or less in line with our expectations. We did enter Q1with high expectations given the triggers that we saw in the first half of the year for late sales, and they proved out to be pretty much in line with our expectations. In terms of the amortization and the sales mix, it's hard to predict on a quarter by quarter basis what projects oil companies will specifically license, and each project carries its own amortization rate. So it's difficult to make the amortization rate on a quarter by quarter basis is probably one of the harder numbers to be able to predict because it all depends upon the sales mix and depends on what an oil company decides to license. So while we did see a larger proportion of our revenues on works in progress or more modern surveys, it's not necessarily a totally accurate conclusion to conclude that those all have higher amortization rates. And also, there are some projects that have not that are in vintages that have not been fully amortized that also. Some of those projects individually could be totally written off the books. So it just depends upon the sales mix.
Okay, thanks.
We will now take our next question from Morten Nystrøm from Fearnley. Please go ahead.
All right. Good evening or good morning, Robert and Christian. Some of my questions have been answered, but firstly, are you able to give us any, let's say, indications about pre-funding level on the Angola survey and your expectations on late sales for that survey? Secondly, are you currently planning any new surveys in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico following the completion of the ongoing VAS survey in June? And finally, looking at your vessel schedule, which you mentioned, Robert, it appears that you might need some more 3D capacity in the fourth quarter of 2012. I guess you are monitoring that market, and if you are, can you say anything about pricing levels on 3D now compared to, let's say, 3D capacity for the fourth quarter of 2011? Thanks.
Sure, Morten. Regarding the Angola project, we don't report pre-funding and late sales expectations on individual projects. I would characterize Angola is a 3D project in a frontier region generally our big 3D projects and more frontier, less mature multi-client markets will carry on general, much higher pre-funding levels than a project in a more mature region like the Gulf of Mexico or the North Sea. And the reason for that is just the increased visibility that we have on late sales on projects in those mature regions. So we build in, when we put a project together, we build in higher pre-funding on a frontier project where there might be less visibility on the number of clients that might license the project going forward and the timing of those late sales. So I would just characterize, in general, I'd characterize Angola as being a frontier 3D project, which carries much higher pre-funding than we might look for in a mature market. And but I would also characterize the Angola project as being generally in line with with our portfolio returns that we. It's not unusual. It's not an unusual project in terms of the return that we might expect from it versus other projects that we have in our portfolio. In terms of new surveys in the Gulf of Mexico, we have a team that constantly works on ideas in the Gulf of Mexico. The project we're working on right now is an innovative project where we're combining new wide azimuth data with previously acquired wide azimuth data, and that's giving us a more full azimuth view of the subsurface for the subsalt play. And, I think there are probably additional opportunities for projects like that in the Gulf of Mexico where we collect more azimuths. And there still remain new areas of the Gulf that still require first-generation wide azimuths. So I'll just leave it at that and just say we do see opportunities and hope to mature opportunities going forward there. In terms of our vessel scheduling, if you do look at the page 25, you do see a bit of a gap in Q4. We have communicated that our investments, we expect them to be more, pretty evenly distributed through the year. So I think the conclusion would be that, yes, we plan on, you could probably assume that we would be chartering capacity in Q4 projects. Yeah. So, I think, and you're right, we continually evaluate the market. I think probably our biggest concern, Morton, is more vessel availability necessarily, rather than necessarily cost, although, of course, we are, we do monitor costs, and cost is important. I think what we also want to make sure is that there's a vessel available at the time we need it, where we need it. So we're constantly watching that, and at this point we're not too concerned with acquiring capacity in that quarter. We handle cost differences through pricing, and that is our customers know what the vessel market's like, and we look to pass some of that additional cost through our pre-funding customers, and also to adjust our late sales for products like that.
Thanks, Robert. If I just get two follow-ups. Firstly, could you remind us about the investment level on the onshore investments you have in 2012, if you can split that? And secondly, it's been limited news regarding Stingray. Could you give us a short update on that, if you're able to do that?
Sure. We don't disclose investment on particular plays or product lines specifically, but probably a good thing to do, Morton, is to just look at the schedule that we published on page 25 of the land crews that we've announced and secured. A good guideline to use on acquisition costs for land crews is somewhere between $50,000 to $90,000 per square mile. And, the upper end of that would be in regions where, access is difficult, like in mountainous or forested regions. And the lower end of that is for easy-to-access sort of projects where you might be able to use vibrosize. I think you could, if you've traveled in the U.S. and studied our geography enough, you can see that we have a couple of projects in flat farmland, and you could assume that those would be easy to access. And then Ohio, where the Firestone project is, tends to be an area that's a little bit less easy to access. It tends to be hilly and forested, so you could probably estimate acquisition costs and acquisition investment based upon that. And of course, a rule of thumb typically in terms of processing costs on a project is somewhere around 10% of overall project costs is processing. In terms of Stingray, Stingray has for us has always been a long-term investment. We do see a pipeline of opportunities emerging this year in terms of tenders. that our Stingray group is working on right now, and requests for information from oil company customers that are interested in permanent reservoir monitoring. So we are optimistic that something's going to materialize for us in that product line soon, but we're not concerned about it. It's we feel very good about the technology that we've acquired through the Stingray acquisition in April of last year. And in the market, to be honest with you, the market seems to be materializing along with our expectations. This is a very new technology. It's technology that that seems to be really kind of catching on in the minds of our customers, and in terms of being differentiated from other types of permanent reservoir monitoring technology out there. So we're optimistic that something's going to develop soon in that area.
Thank you.
Thank you, Martin.
We will now take our next question from James Lamb from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Actually, all my questions have been answered. Thanks very much.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We will now take our next question from Amy Wong of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I had two questions, please. The first one is, can you just give us a sense of how you compare the ease of securing pre-funding now compared to, say, 2 years ago? And then secondly, do you think this higher pre-funding rate level of 60 to 70%, is that kind of a phenomenon for 2012, or do you think that's kind of a sustainable level of pre-funding going forward? And then secondly, can you help me out with the kind of expected news flow on the Norwegian continental shelf licensing, 22nd licensing round? Because I understand that blocks have been nominated, and I think we expect some bid results to come out around later this year, but you've also just announced that you have a pre-funding project, a project starting up with data available in Q3. So can you just help me out figure out what to expect from that? Thanks.
Sure. I'll take your last question first, if that's okay, on the Norwegian 22nd round. The schedule there was in January, oil companies were asked to turn in their nominations for blocks to be included in the 22nd round. I believe it was in March the Norwegian Petroleum Directorate came out and revealed the blocks that they are going that they proposed to include in the Norwegian 22nd round, and so from March to it's early summer. I think in the 21st round, which was 2 years ago, I think it was around the third week of June, the government of Norway came out and formally announced which blocks were going to be included. So between that March date and an early summer date when they announced the blocks, the final blocks, is a comment period by which all interested parties are given the opportunity to comment on which blocks should be included in the license round. So where we are right now is within this comment period. And I think that in terms of the number of blocks that were nominated, it was if not an all-time high, it was close to that in terms of nominated blocks to the NPD. We are quite pleased to see the positions of those blocks that have been put up for comment by the NPD, in that they are positioned very well relative to our investments over the past couple of years. We've been investing pretty aggressively in multi-client 3D data, particularly in the Barents Sea. And we're continuing to invest. So you are correct. In fact, we just announced a project on the Finnmark platform, which is a geographical province of the Barents Sea, where there are a number of blocks that have been announced or proposed for the Norwegian round. In fact, 5 blocks that have been recommended, and our plan is to go ahead and complete acquisition of that survey and do what we call fast track processing. So we won't be have a final product available for oil companies to utilize this year for the license realm, but we will have a preliminary product that is almost a final product, but it hasn't had all the bells and whistles, as it were, applied to it in the processing stream. But it will give a 3D view of the subsurface to oil companies that are evaluating that acreage. The bids are due in the fourth quarter of this year, and we expect that winners of the round would be announced in early 2013. So that's sort of the timeline and sort of our activity related to that round. Also, where I would say also that we've recommenced our 2D campaigns up in both the North Sea as well as the Barents Sea this year, and those products, which in fact we've been investing in the Barents Sea and North Sea's 2D programs for decades, and those products tend to be very popular too for oil companies to evaluate for these license rounds. In terms of your question on pre-funding, in terms of ease of pre-funding versus a couple of years ago, we have upgraded our pre-funding levels in terms of our forecasts and guidance for this year. Whether it's an anomaly or not, I think it's simply based upon the visibility we have on projects that we currently have sanctioned and will sanction here in the future, where we have pretty high visibility on our oil company customers and what their desires are. I do think it's a reflection of oil company interest in new seismic data. I think there is a oil companies are going back. They're returning to the task of exploring for reserves. I would say that it's never easy to get pre-funding. It's one of the more difficult tasks and one of the more difficult jobs we have in our company, and that's why some of the more important guys that we have in our company are the project developers that put these projects together and work with our customers to get the pre-funding commitments lined up. So it's not an easy task, and I don't think it's any easier now than it was in the past. I think if anything, it's the mix of projects that we see this year, and it's just the interest in new seismic data that oil companies need, which might be driving the pre-funding levels up a little bit from what we saw last year.
All right, that's very clear. Thank you very much for that.
We will now take our next question from Christian Deason from Pareto. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Question on the Gecko Eagle in Angola. The option you have on that, is that for an extension of the pre-salt survey, or could you put that somewhere else?
We got an option on that, but I'm not going to comment on where it might go at this point.
All right. And just a question on EM. You've used that on a few occasions historically, not very much recently, but how do you view that as sort of a product in your portfolio going forward?
Yeah, I guess in 2008, 2009, we did some work with one of the EM providers in Northwest Europe. We do have that data as part of our data library. I think we view it as a valid tool, sort of an exploration company's toolbox. It can't be used sort of independently. It's pretty critical. To understand EM data, you have to have a good knowledge of the subsurface in terms of a geologic model, and so I would say that it's a tool, but it's a tool that is best used with other data types like seismic data. Where we have, and we've used it for our own internal work, and in fact, we probably found the EM data that we do have in our library has been probably the most useful to us. In terms of de-risking our own areas, along with 2D data that we have in our library, we use it to de-risk areas for multi-client 3D, and we've used it pretty effectively for that as we've started new 3D multi-client projects in Northwest Europe. It's an interesting technology. I think it has its place, and I wouldn't I wouldn't discount us using it in the future. We just haven't done anything since 2009 with it.
Gotcha. And just finally, share buybacks. You haven't done any of that this year. Is that something you're going to start up doing again? You have still a very high cash balance even after your dividends now.
We use our cash for a number of things. Specifically, organic investment, and we find that that's the best use of it because of the superior returns we get from our own library business. And so obviously you can see we're raising our investment guidance too. So we see a number of opportunities that we might not have seen early in the year that we can employ that cash. Our board has communicated to the market that it's their intention to authorize or to approve share buybacks that Christian and I propose, and we'll look for those times to do it this year, given the other needs that we have for our current cash. I'd point out that in March of last year, our cash balance was high too. I mean, it was kind of a timing issue. Typically at the end of Q1 is typically the highest. The highest point in the year in which we have cash balance, and that's prior to, of course, the dividend, and prior to our typically very busy North Sea investment season. So I guess there is a little bit of a seasonality in terms of our cash balance.
All right, thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question at this time, please press star 1. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will now take our next question from Tom Ackermans from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon and good morning. We continue to see interest in East Africa increase, and I don't think you've got any vessels currently scheduled to go to that region. Can you just talk about the opportunities you see there and the plans you might have for the next couple of years?
Yeah, we currently haven't announced any projects over there. It's an area we watch. We do have some 2D data library offshore Madagascar, and you can see that on one of the slides that we have in our slide pack. So we have exposure in that particular region. I wouldn't overrule future projects in that area. Like I say, we look at it. It's an interesting area, obviously, with the exploration success that we've seen. I think certainly the 3D work that's occurred there recently has been on a contract proprietary basis versus multi-client.
Exactly.
So it hasn't, outside of 2D, it really hasn't developed into a significant multi-client market really for anybody yet.
Okay, let's see what happens in the next couple of years. Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Paul Dahl of Swedbank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Just a couple questions from me, if it's okay. Just so I understood it correctly, the reason why you're upgrading your pre-funding ratio now is mainly due to the mix of projects that you're seeing, because typically I would assume that if it's market-driven, then you would also upgrade your late-sales guidance. So if you could please elaborate on this and help me better understand this item, please.
The pre-funding ratio upgrade is based upon simply what we're seeing in terms of customer activity on some of our new projects. I wouldn't read a lot into a calculation of late sales that you might be calculating given our new guidance and how that might have changed from our previous guidance. We don't guide on late sales specifically. So and in fact, if you take the extreme ranges, you can get a late sales figure that's increased from what we were guiding previous in the year, depending upon what numbers you plug into your calculation from our range. So I wouldn't read a lot into that. Obviously you saw that we were pretty pleased with our late sales in Q1, and it was in line with our expectations. And we're and we believe that we see additional triggers in the rest of the year that will drive our late sales performance. So I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, thanks. Then on the work in progress, which if we look on a quarterly basis, you know, you have a very strong development in dollar terms in sales from work in progress, whereas the sales of other vintages actually have declined the last couple of quarters. Could you, you know, help me better understand why that is and what trends you're seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, works in that it varies. If you go back and look on a quarter by quarter basis, those numbers and that distribution varies pretty widely, and it's hard to predict, you know, on a quarter by quarter basis. I would say that, you know, while the percentage may have declined on some of the older vintages that are totally you know, off our books. You know, the dollar figure is still quite substantial. You know, as an overall mix or overall portion of our revenue. So, you know, I think in our works in progress right now, we have obviously some of our more popular products, I guess. You know, our wide azimuth data sets that we're acquiring or still processing are within that category. In the Gulf of Mexico, and that's clearly those projects have performed well for us. So it's, you know, I wouldn't read a lot into it just because it's really a hard number to predict, dependent upon where oil companies might be buying data at any particular time. I mean, you could go, you could close a sale the first day of the very next quarter, and if that sale had been included in the previous quarter, the distribution would have been very different. So, you know, I don't see anything unusual in that distribution.
Okay. Thank you very much.
As there are no further questions at this time, I would like to turn the call back for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much for listening to our call today. We are very pleased with our start to 2012. We think it's a start that puts us in line. Obviously, we've upgraded our guidance and believe that we see a great pipeline of opportunities going forward. And we're quite proud of our employees that are generating these opportunities and selling our products. They're performing very well, and so we look forward to reporting again in August on our Q2 results, and look forward to talking to you then.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.